Hello, and welcome back to the Unsprawling Podcast, the podcast about Calgary's built environment and how we get around it. Today is episode 10 of our recap. We yesterday just finished the 11th day of public hearings on the RCG upzoning in Calgary, and it seems like we have only one more day left. I think Monday will be the final day. We'll see, unless there's like a flurry of activity to sign up. But I think the public hearing is pretty well over. I mean, the councillors have certainly heard everything they've heard before. But to join me in today's discussion, I've got Connor back with us.
Hey, how's it going? I'm Connor Meinke.
And we've got David back with us as well.
Yep, glad to be here.
And with us joining us for the first time, Sabrina Grover.
Hello. I'm looking forward to the end of the public hearings.
yes, as are we all. This has gone on too long. But who knows? Maybe we'll break
it's
a record
another
time. It's democracy. Everybody gets to say their piece. That's been one thing I've noticed. So many people saying, you're not listening. There's no engagement. There's no way for us to say what we want to say. And I'm like, we're able to just stand here and filibuster the councillors. I had a conversation with Councillor Sharp closer to the beginning of this, and she said that they looked at, you know, are there any rules for ending a public hearing? No, they have to sit and listen forever as long as people are showing up to speak. So it really could go on forever, but it looks like it's dying off, which I think is fair. We got to release these people from their prison eventually.
I mean, the irony, David, is like, if we pass rezoning, we won't have to have so many public hearings.
Won't that be nice? And I think that's an important point. A lot of people have said, and we'll bring this up again later in the episode, a lot of people have said that this is a public hearing to end public hearings. It's not. This is a public hearing about land use to upzone the entire city. Normally, you'd do it parcel by parcel, which takes a lot of time. The city in this case is just saying, hey, if we're doing this anyways, let's just have the whole conversation for all of them right now. That's what's happening. But we've got some highlighted speakers to talk about. David, if you want to take us away with yours.
Yeah, sure. And I apologize. I don't have the last name handy, but it was later in the afternoon yesterday, there was a speaker, and I believe they were 19-year-old or so student by the name of Ben, if I remember correctly, very articulately put forward the collective anxiety and the collective, negative outlook, I guess, for the next generation, right? To be then patronized by Councillor McLean, as one does. But, it was a very, articulate. It was captured. It was not saying this is a perfect solution. It's saying this is an iterative step. You know, this is one of many levers that we have to pull, as I've said before. And I found it ever more moving because it was contrasted by two, very, very less articulate. It was bookended by two less articulate anti-speakers, shall I say. And I think it really highlighted that, again, these decisions are not helping they're not helping me necessarily. They're helping, the next generation or the next few generations when we're planning for 20, 30, 40 years down the road in the city. So I found it very, very moving and very articulate.
Yeah. And this really is a long-term plan. And I think if I'm remembering this speaker correctly, Dan McLean even said to him, Councillor McLean said that, yes, things are definitely harder now than they have been before, to which Councillor Walcott said, quote, like, can I quote you on that? So I thought that was pretty funny and pretty good. We got Councillor McLean to admit that things are hard. Things are rough now and we need solutions. What about you, Sabrina? Who was your highlighted speaker?
So I'm going to shout out my friend, Alexa Briggs, who in essence said, I want density so I can have nice shit in my neighborhood, which is true. She lives in Killarney, and if you walk around Killarney, certainly it's like on its way to becoming more dense and it's got some of those bones in place, but yeah, there's not a coffee shop in sight. There's like one pub. there's that Greek restaurant, and it, you know, and it is to some, like, to the point of people who are like, well, we should build around nodes and corridors, we should build around transit. It's like, well, it's pretty close to the Westbrook train station, like, it's got that infrastructure there, and yet still no density. So yeah, I think, you know, the short and simple in favor side is one of the biggest arguments is get density, get nice stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's a really important point. Even when talking about the LAPs, I mean, the LAPs don't have teeth. They're kind of just like, yeah, vague, you know, like, this is what it could be if somebody wants to do this, you know. And I think this is hopefully, I don't know, in a way gives those things teeth. But I also think this get nice stuff argument is maybe a demonstration of how this RCG rezoning doesn't go far enough. I think we should have more mixed use allowed in our neighborhoods. But Connor, who was your highlighted speaker?
Yeah, my highlighted speaker, like last time, is going to be a no side. And I believe his name was Jason New. And he came up with a presentation that was, to be honest, just a nice breath of fresh air from the no side, where he just described, like, hey, like, these are some of the actual concerns. These are some of the solutions that could be amended. And I don't think, I disagree with some of them, but I think some of the solutions would be, like, amendments that some of these councillors could get short wins, where they can go back to their constituents and say, see, I got this thing that you guys were worried about. By one of them could be, like, allowing for higher fences if you're worried about, like, windows looking in, or some of the like lowering the heights of the actual ground floor access, because he was saying, like, you kind of, like, come up a few meters and then you're kind of looking in. So it was stuff like that where it seemed like, you know, good faith solutions to these, and still working within the bounds of I think what the general solutions that we're looking for are. So
yeah, yeah. And there've been a few people like that over the course of this hearing, where they say, I'm opposed, or even I'm in favor, but we really need to, you know, find solutions for some of these things, because there are obviously concerns, and there are some solutions that exist out there, but they haven't necessarily made it into being a requirement that might kind of push people into doing this. One speaker I wanted to highlight was that CEO guy. He said something that I thought was really, really funny. He suggested that maybe instead of doing the RCG rezoning, we should get together a group of industry professionals and experts and have them come up with ideas for how to solve the housing crisis. And I thought that was hilarious, because we did do that. It's called the Housing and Affordability Task Force. And they came up with 98 things we could do. And guess what? RCG rezoning was one of those things. That's why we're having this conversation. Because industry experts, yeah, we should just do it again. Obviously, didn't get it right the first time. And I did appreciate there was, I think it was a professor who spoke right after him, like an actual expert spoke right after him and said, yes, we should do this. So I think that might maybe be settled. But let's get into a bit of a conversation here on some disinformation, misinformation, nodes and corridors, and things of the sort. Willem Klumpenhauer just had published today in the Calgary Herald an opinion piece called "As the Rezoning Hearing Drags On, Misinformation Abounds." And in this, he talks a little bit about a lot of these issues that people have had. He mentions, for example, that the Housing and Affordability Task Force convened well before the Trudeau government's Housing Accelerator Fund started. That's something that a lot of people seem to miss. They think this was Justin Trudeau's idea. This was a baked in Calgary idea. This was locals who thought of this idea. But something else that I know David particularly has an axe to grind on, and I think we all might have an axe to grind on this, is the nodes and corridors. David, do you want to start this conversation off talking about what are nodes and corridors? Why are people obsessed with them? And why is it maybe not the solution?
Yeah, sure. It, the nodes and corridors approach, and I'm going to be, you know, very general, generalize it to a fault perhaps, but it's essentially saying, put people on the main streets because there's usually transit. there's services, and there's ability. It wouldn't impact the community as much. Essentially, you know, throw them along the busy roads, because A, there's going to be less people to object there, and B, there's arguably more services available nearby. And what I would push back on, I guess, is A, there's a whole litany of, you know, environmental and health concerns with everybody being pushed to these busier roads. You've got higher air pollution, you've got, you know, less green space. Green spaces are generally nestled in the middle. You're actually removing people from services a lot of the time as well. It's being viewed as a you know, just put up some towers at the edge of each community and that'll be enough. And you do the math, you look at you look at the numbers that are coming into Calgary, you know, ranging between 30 to 40 odd thousand people a year, and how long it takes to get these, you know, major developments done. It's a drop in the bucket. It's part of the answer, sure, is this transit-oriented development, building around transit stations and whatnot. But it can't be the whole answer. The math just doesn't pan out that way. These large developments take, you know, on the order of decades. Like Midtown is looking into 2040s or 2050s, I believe it is, to finish their build out to build 11,000 homes, or sorry, to house 11,000 people, I believe is what it is, which is not even half of 1 year of growth. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it in theory, it sounds like a great idea. Let's use that. Let's bolster transit and put everybody along those nodes, those corridors. But it really isn't. It's not an equitable approach, nor is it, you know, it just doesn't add up, the number of houses that we need.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people in this conversation have kind of said, like, they've pointed to Vancouver. Somebody yesterday, I think, said, but that's what Vancouver does, is densify. They densified. But Vancouver does the tall and sprawl worse than anybody. They do the nodes and corridors worse than anybody, and it doesn't work. We need a very gradual, like, gradiented, you know, everything gets a little sprinkling of density. And it's important to note, and Willem mentions this in his opinion piece here, he says that it's like there's like a 3% change over the next 10 years, right? Like 3% of the properties in a neighborhood, in one of these older neighborhoods that is ripe for redevelopment with those 1960s bungalows, we'll see 3% of those change. Connor, you've been to Vancouver. You've lived in Vancouver. I've lived in, right? Vancouver. Can you give us a bit of a perspective from the coast?
Yeah, it's like, it's so weird to think, because I think what a lot of people really need to do is, you can look at the zoning, like the zoning laws across cities. So I brought it up on my presentation with Calgary, and you can see it's just a sea of yellow, which was low density single family housing. And then you go to Vancouver and you see very much the same thing. You get your nodes and corridors that have the upzoning for mixed use and businesses and things like that. But there are so many mansions and single family homes, and like, that's what I lived in what was essentially a frat house with seven of my buddies. It was great for COVID. we lived in an 8-bedroom house off of campus. And the NIMBYism in Vancouver is like absurd, right? It's considered this insane cycling city, and they just removed a cycle lane that goes through downtown that they put in during COVID, and it was awesome. And the NIMBYs in Point Grey just stopped the SkyTrain from going to UBC, right? Like there's so many like structural barriers, and then now the First Nations bands are building those towers, and it's getting huge pushback again from the people in those areas. But they said, look, it's our land, we're going to do what we want with it. And they're able to sidestep all of this like NIMBYism that's there, but it is super ingrained in that place. And it's just, there's so many single family homes. Like, you go down Marine Drive and it's just mansion, right? Like,
Well, I think like the thing is, not everybody wants to live in a tall condo. Like, that is the point of this conversation. And it is wild that we keep having the same thing over and over again, right? Like, I think there was a guy yesterday who also talked about, I really liked the way he phrased it. It was like busy playgrounds. And, you know, we need busy playgrounds to have connected families. We need busy playgrounds so kids have, you know, new friends in their community. We need busy playgrounds so that we can rely on each other to like get to school. And it's like, we can't have busy playgrounds and you can't have schools and you can't have teachers who live in those communities unless you have places for them to live. And like, heads up, they don't all want to live in a 400, 500 square foot condo. Like, families want the kind of diverse housing. Families can definitely live in a townhouse. They can definitely live in a row house. And there's lots of way to get, like, you know, the craziest thing I've heard is all of these people who are like, well, you can't raise a family unless you have a front yard and a backyard. Like, how do you think 7 billion people live in the rest of the world? And so I think that it's just like this idea of nodes and corridors is fine to solve for one kind of problem, but not to actually create the kind of housing or communities around housing that we want and that people want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, I think about it, this whole conversation, like, you can't raise a family in like an apartment or in a townhome even. I'm like, what planet do you live on? There was one guy who was, there was one guy who was like, well, what about lawn darts? He's like, where will we play lawn darts? And I was like, that's your worry? And he says, where will the children play? And I say, we have so many playgrounds in Calgary. I grew up in single family homes. And at my dad's house, we never played in the backyard. At my mom's house, we couldn't play in the backyard because it was all a garden anyways. But we went to the playground. There was always a playground on our block. There was always a place that we could go and play. And we'd get social interactions with other kids in the neighborhood. We'd meet other people. We'd play with other kids, right? Like, it was a great time. And it was so easy. We'd walk outside the front door and we're talking. It's the same people who are wondering why kids don't go outside and why kids are scared of the world and why kids have their faces stuck in iPads who are saying, I have to keep them within my little walled garden in my backyard.
Well, also, those people don't even have these kids. Facilities. Like, the ones who are talking about it, like, at one point they had little children. It's very clear that they no longer have those little children because most of them start their entire speech with, well, I bought this house between 30 and 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think part of the challenge, and this is like a human nature thing, right, is understanding that there's different ways that people live, raise children, and that the way that you were raised, and I will disclaim, I grew up in the suburbs of Vancouver. So somebody who's talking about, well, we need the local, you know, I flood my backyard for hockey every night. And I'm kind of going, I didn't have that because it was Vancouver, you know. But that understanding that just the way that you had it, maybe it's idealistic in your mind and it was the perfect way to do it. That's not the only way. And stop trying to force that on everybody else. Let us choose. Yeah. Let the market, if you want to view it that way, let the market drive it.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Having those options is really, really a must. And that's what this allows. We can't just tall and sprawl. The only options should not be living in a large single family home with a big backyard or a condo tower. You know, those should not be the only options. We need everything and everything in between. Connor, you've been silent for a second, so I'm going to pick on you there. What other misinformation have you seen there? I know you mentioned to us earlier some cherry picking of studies. Do you want to fill us in on your thoughts there?
Yeah. So the issue is, we've heard the Auckland one a number of times, being like, oh, this doesn't work. And Willem already described that one. And then there was the cherry picking on the Minneapolis ones, which is the ones that I presented on. And the lady, to be fair, literally said, oh, I just read these headlines. And the headline was like, the Minneapolis study is yet to prove whatever. And when you actually read the article, because it's from the Minneapolis Federal Reserve, they say, oh yeah, a bunch of these policies came in 2022 and 2023. We don't have the data to actually compare it. So we like that's what they were quoting. And the actual studies, the counterfactual that the Reserve is using is different to the Pew Trust, which did another study on Minneapolis. And they basically, their counterfactual includes places like Austin, which just went, what is zoning? like, what if we just didn't zone anything? And just, that's not exactly, but they have really, really light zoning restrictions. So that's why, that's one of the reasons Texas is actually leading the world in renewable developments as well, is because they have less regulations, so that it's easier to build renewables in Texas than it is in California, right? Like, it's it's this interesting dynamic. So it's that stuff. And then obviously the WEF and like all of these other like conspiracy theories, they kind of all fall together. I've said this before on your podcast, but it's like anytime people make like an environmental argument, it's just, it drives me insane because it's the opposite, right? Like if we reduced the like housing sprawl by like 80%, and let's say we took away all of your gardens and all of your stuff, and we could in theory replace all of that with a park, right? So you get this huge shared space where you can have these big trees, you can have these like essentially old growth forests starting to grow and spring up and all of these things. And they just seem to not think of that because they're so in the like, well, this is my garden, this is my space. And the sharing aspect is really hard for I think some of these people to understand. And that's why the public transit argument is also difficult for them to understand, because when you move to like a shared system, it's hard to take yourself out of like the private system of, this is my private car, this is my private property, this is my private garden, this is my private, all of this. But when you share those resources, you get these like super linear benefits. So,
and what I said, Connor, on my speech was, it's scale issue, right? It's a scale issue. We're looking at a plot scale, and that's what people are used to looking at. But we have to look at a city, at a ecosystem, at a, you know, much broader scale. I completely agree. And can I just add one other point too? I think what came very clear yesterday, and this ties in with Willem's piece, was there's a lot of folks who feel that they can spend an hour or two reading something and consider that they've researched it. And then it's contrasted by folks like Francisco, who called in from the University of Calgary, who have designed their entire research programs around, you know, this kind of stuff. You know, that the access to ability to access information. You know, one guy yesterday said he did a statistical analysis, and then we found out that it was a control F in Adobe PDF reader, right? So, you know, it's this misconception that, okay, I've done a couple hours of research. I know about it. I know all this work, all there is to do. So I'm now an expert, right? And that really, I think, has become very prolific yesterday for sure, the last few days.
Yeah. And obviously we'll see more of that on Monday, the last day of this public hearing. So going forward, I want to hear how everybody's feeling about this. Are we optimistic, pessimistic? And we'll start with Sabrina on this.
I mean, I'm optimistic that it will pass. But I think it's been actually good. Like, I know it's been obviously an extremely painful 11 days of 12-hour hearings, but I think it's been good to actually have people engage. And like the thing, you know, I said this to you, Connor and Alex, when I saw you at the hearings, like it is incredible the number of young people who've come out. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think a lot of times people think like, oh, things just happen in politics and like, I can't make change or I can't participate or nothing affects me, whatever, like who cares? And I just think the number of young people that have come out to talk about this, like that's probably a transformative experience in their life, right? Like they are now going to be young people who care about political things, whether at the municipal level or at the, you know, provincial level or federal level, they're going to be active and engaged. And maybe, you know, they were researching it before, they were thinking about it before, but now they're actually involved in it. And I really think that that is such an exceptionally powerful tool and such an exceptionally powerful group of people that we've activated. So I'm like really excited about that. And I think that makes me feel optimistic. And to all those people who like have been on the anti side or the, you know, like they don't want it, I think it's been good for them to hear from all these young people and to actually like see what's at stake, because I think, you know, obviously they live in their own little world. They live in their own little single family, very nice sounding bungalow with like yards and stuff. And I think this has been a positive experience for like them too, hopefully. Hopefully they've watched it to see what other people have to say about this. You know, I think to your point, to all of your points, like the facts on this that people have raised are like, like I'm not convinced by like citizen fact finding and like the democratization of facts. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, it was a good process. I'm happy that it happened. And I am optimistic that we pass rezoning.
Yeah. Yeah. I certainly hope so. Connor, what about you? How are you feeling?
I think I'm slowly becoming more positive. This is my third time on the podcast, so I think I'm more positive than I originally was. Oh boy, am I like burning out on these. Yeah. I can only imagine the counselors. I think Penner had like a blanket one of the days, and I was like, that's a good strategy. Like, this is just, it's starting to kind of get to the point where it's, yeah, we've heard everything. Like, I don't think any arguments are going to change it. I think some of the no arguments are probably just adding fuel to the fire of not listening. Because I think every time you bring up WEF or like conspiracy theories, you kind of show that it's like, that's the team you're on, right? Like, as much as it's, yeah. I don't like the team dynamics, but it's like, there's a very clear, like, there's like a middle ground where people are actually engaging with it. And then the four side that's kind of going through all of the evidence stuff. And then the way on like the other side of the planet, no side, which is, you know, planes falling out of the sky and a cabal of lizard people controlling the world and like whatever other like nonsense that I can't believe people would say in real life and in public.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm personally glad that they can come to the public hearing and say that. I'd rather they say it at a public hearing than, you know, be pushed underground and get extreme or whatever. But so come on out to the public hearing and say all the crazy stuff that you've researched on your own. David, what about you? How do you feel?
Yeah, I echo some of Sabrina's sentiments too. I said it before when we chatted on previous podcast, the showing up of students is a huge change, you know, turning point. You have to have pissed off a lot of people to get the students to come out and mobilize. So that's good. I think that's really good. I'm a little less optimistic. I think what we're going to see is an effective gutting of it by amendment. You know, we're going to have amendments out the yin yang, amendments to amendments. And I think we're going to effectively see essentially a watered down version that's going to be like RC2, to be honest. But I'm happy that we've had this process. I do wonder, and you know, all of us I think are probably aware that the land use bylaw renewal is in progress. You know, did we I don't like the team dynamic like you were saying, Connor. Did we mobilize? Did we push for this when the big fight might be, or the big fight? I don't like this combat, you know, analogy, but is there going to be a bigger discussion now when the land use bylaw renewal comes up? I don't know, but that for the RCG stuff, I think I'm optimistic that something will move forward. That's hopefully a little bit higher than RC1 as a base zoning. But what that looks like, I'm not as optimistic about, I guess, but time will tell. Hopefully I'm wrong.
I hope so. I hope you're proven wrong. I'm also pretty worried about a gutting by amendments. You can already tell a lot of the things that counselors are thinking about. You know, Counselor Chabot obviously has a lot of the LAP stuff on his mind, which I think we'll have a conversation about on a later podcast. I think one important thing Mian mentioned actually is that the neighborhood local actually supports RCG.
In most of the new LAPs. So the first one that went through the North Hill Communities Local Area Plan, I don't think it is quite the same designation. Yeah. But most of the newer ones, that's what they're doing, is the base is RCG anyways.
Yeah, yeah, or at least almost RCG. I know I was reading through the Heritage Local Area Plan, and it said something about, you know, if you're this close to a school or a park, then you're automatically allowed to do up to 3 stories and, you know, and 3 units on a block or whatever, or on a lot. So there's, you know, there's already some existing allowance for that. And I know the LAPs have received a lot of pushback, and now they're receiving a lot of love, because I guess people would rather that than what they think RCG is going to be.
We could do a whole episode just on my experience sitting through as a community association person and a local area planning, and it wasn't lovey-dovey like a lot of these people are purporting it to be.
Oh, we will do a full episode about that. I'll be sending you a message to set that up, David, because I think that'll be a really interesting conversation, especially in the context of this RCG rezoning stuff. Then we will wrap it up there. Thanks for joining me, guys, and we'll see everybody on the 11th recap episode of the public hearing. And after that, I think that'll be the last public hearing recap. And then we'll get into the real interesting stuff, the questions for administration, the amendments, and the debate. I'm super excited for that. So we'll see you then.